Hello everyone and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. The podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology including vision, cameras and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello everyone and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Rolf Wojciech. Rolf is the founder and chief software architect at Blickfeld. Rolf, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
No, I really appreciate you fitting us in after a busy period returning from holidays.
Yeah, it's always a lot to do when you come back, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you almost have to work. You have to make up for the 2 weeks in 1 week.
Yeah, as a founder, even like your vacations might not always be so clear cut, you know, you always have stuff to do. But yeah, it was good to have spent some time with the family as well.
Nice. Let's get to know you a little bit more, Rolf. Let's get to know you a little bit more before we actually start talking about Blickfeld. What's your sort of background before founding Blickfeld and what's sort of led you into this direction of your career?
Yeah. So my background is in computer science. I started at the TU München, started out working in a different larger companies for a few years. And then actually before Blickfeld, I founded my first company with Matthias Müller, our CEO today. That was the company PhosphorX. We were kind of revolutionizing the wind industry. We were building a sensor that allows to measure what's going on a wind turbine. So this has in common with Blickfeld, it's also B2B. And the curious part about this is in the past, these wind turbines were really kind of operating blind on what's going on with their blades. And we were the kind of the enabling technology to make sure that wind turbines today can be built in a cheaper way and can be monitored much better regarding ice building and stuff like that. So we built that up and made it successful. And then this is when FluMPT, our third founder, approached us and said, hey guys, I know you got this stuff going on there with the wind turbines, but here's an exciting new idea. Would you be able to help me out with that? And he pitched to us the idea of building a new kind of LiDAR with a new technology. So that's when we looked into that and said, okay, well, it's a bit late in the game, right? There's already some LiDAR companies. So this really has to be a kick-ass idea in order to have a chance on the market. So we looked at it together and made sure it's feasible. And this is what was the starting point of Blickfeld, where we came up with a concept to build a much smaller LiDAR but out of a lot of off-the-shelf components with one new key component. And this enabled us basically to say, okay, let's catch up with the existing players and try to overtake them. And yeah, and that's what we're doing.
Nice. Yeah, that's really cool. And do you know what? I really, really like as well the stuff you were doing with PhosphorX. I'm pretty sure if you were to look at that now, the applications that you could even introduce computer vision to that would be great. I've even heard of people using it in solar panels and solar plants to optimize where the panels are placed to get the most sun, and then also to check for damage, which obviously across acres, it's quite big, right?
True, yeah. I think in this case, the technology we used was a fiber optic sensor. Like you can imagine it like the sensors you use for transferring data. So you put that in the blades and then you can detect very small strains on the sensor. So if your blade gets moved. But it's an amazing technology because it enables us today to build cheaper turbines and more energy efficient more energy output, basically, which is really nice to have such a contribution on your resume.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive. So you started with Blickfeld. You had this ambition of building a lighter, smaller, off the shelf. Look, we know it's not that easy. There's a lot of parts before that you have to even get right before to even being able to produce a lighter, researching, developing. What were like the early stages? And I suppose not to say when did you sort of feel a breakthrough, because it's very hard to give one moment, but when did you kind of feel like it was going from dream to reality?
Yeah. I guess that's a good question. Yeah, I think The key component for us is what we call a beam deflection unit. It's an important challenge in LiDAR is to make sure that the idea of LiDAR, right, is that you have a light source that illuminates the room, and for each direction in which you shine this laser, you get a reflection. And the big challenge here is making sure that you spread this light quickly through the room. And that's a challenge that others have been solving by using a rotational system where you have like a lot of lasers stacked on top of each other and you just rotate it at high speeds. But this gives the challenge that you have a mechanical system that can be prone to a lot of failures. You have bearings, you have like, you know, mechanical loads. So what we started out with is that we said we have to do this in a more clever way. So our LiDAR instead uses a beam deflection unit that is made out of silicon. And the idea is that you can very quickly move a mirror if you bring it into resonance frequency. That's what we're using. And that component, that was what I would say was the core breakthrough to get that to work, because it's quite, let's say, small and detailed and has to work reliably for a lot of time. It has to work under vibrations. And this is the core thing that we focused on, because the rest of the system then is relatively simple. You have a laser that is commodity. You have a detector. I mean, that's still making improvements all over the time, but it's still a very, let's say, widely available technology. And the beam deflection is the challenging part. So I would say this was the core achievement to make sure that this runs and to make sure that this is also working under automotive conditions. And that's what we achieved. And it's a really cool technology now, because instead of using, let's say, 64 or 128 light sources, you can, or in lasers, you can just use a single one and direct it efficiently through the scene.
We spoke about it, like a big misconception a lot of people have about you guys is that you are in and just focusing on the autonomous driving space, when in fact you are providing a suite of LiDAR products and looking to run them on low cost hardware instead. I suppose just to give people an idea, where can they use your LiDARs if it, of course, autonomous driving, but where else? Where else do you look to add value to companies?
Yeah, there's two aspects of this. Even in autonomous driving, there's different subsections, right? There's and one part that we focus on a lot there is the ability to seamlessly integrate the LiDAR into the car, right? To have it in your side mirrors, in your headlamps, in your rear combination lights. So that's an aspect that is going to enable the big companies who really are keen on design to make sure the design stays intact. That being said, like you mentioned, we are very excited as well about applications in industry applications. So basically, imagine our world today, right? If you're in a player who wants to do, let's say, a people pedestrian analytics, right? How many people are walking through a mall and which shops are they stopping in front of? That's a challenge that today is not really solved well. And LiDAR really lends to that, because it's inherently privacy friendly. It doesn't detect any faces or doesn't allow to kind of, you know, identify somebody in a crowd, but it still allows you to track precisely where somebody is, where movements are going on. And the interesting part about this business is that these customers have very little idea about computer vision. I mean, they might have some people on their team who have some knowledge about this, but processing a 3D point cloud is quite a different beast compared to, let's say, image processing, which is very widely available and very well covered with open source solutions. So what we identified very early on is that we need to not only offer the LiDAR hardware, but also offer a efficient way to process this point cloud into actionable data, so that these industry customers can just take our solution, and instead of having to program against a point cloud, they can directly program against an object list, right? They understand here is somebody moving, and they can act on that with their existing architectures, but they don't have to actually deal with the perception challenges, and we cover that for them.
Nice. I suppose, look, it's a common question I'd ask, and again, it's different depending on different use cases, what people are looking for. the way you guys are doing it, you're doing, I suppose, LiDAR and point clouds. Big discussion, LiDAR versus radar versus cameras, you know, which is more, I suppose, efficient? Is it a combination? What is it? But I mean, if we were to go in the way yous are working at it, you've just mentioned there, one great use case is that it can be used in public areas because LiDAR doesn't capture personal data, personal information. But is there any other reasons why yous would recommend or why yous have chosen your LiDAR versus a camera or even a combination of LiDAR and camera? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think an alternative technology some people are looking at is cameras. So as the people analytics is a good example that the people have tried to solve it with cameras, but in order to be reliable and to, especially to kind of locate people precisely in a 3D space, the approach they've chosen is, as an example, is like a top-down mounting, right? Imagine you have to put the camera directly on top of your scene in order to be able to get proper detections. This can be extremely costly. Even if your camera is cheap, the cabling and the mounting solutions you're going to need for that and the upkeep to keep that all running on a larger area is extremely relevant for an industry application. And if you use a LiDAR, you can basically mount it like you would do with a security camera, some in the corner of your room, and it can do use this kind of isometric perspective to do a very good job in getting the 3D kind of bearings correctly. And the other technology people are, or we compare ourselves with, is thermal cameras, which, for example, in security is often the case, or in traffic applications. And thermal cameras are in the same magnitude of cost, but they do come with a few shortcomings. So they can get kind of confused by residual heat. If you have something very warm, let's say a truck is parking in front of a traffic light, standing in front of a traffic light, the truck moves away, but there's this residual heat that kind of keeps giving you a perceptual result, even though the truck already left. And these challenges can happen, and the cameras have the normal cameras have the same challenges with different lighting conditions or weather conditions. And that's also something that LiDAR covers really well, that you're kind of agnostic to what's going on with your lighting in the scene. You don't have to do training for different lighting situations. You can just use the same algorithm for all of these scenarios, no matter what the lighting situation is.
Look, I've got a couple of questions, I suppose, even just to follow up on that.
Sure.
A great example that you've actually given for me to base it off. You mentioned, you know, you can hook up your LiDAR like you do a surveillance camera in the corner. How does that work in terms of running a LiDAR point cloud algorithm on a surveillance device in terms of what computational power would that need, battery life power would that need versus a camera device? And yeah, I mean, we'll start with that before I even follow up.
Power consumption is of course, a big point, more for drone usages, which we also do. But in these applications, usually you run a cable, like a power cable. But challenges that do come up are the processing required. So one aspect that we early on also kind of decided upon is that we want to make sure that our processing can run on our device. So today we use a software called Percept that can be installed on any PC or server, but we're in the process of rolling this out with our new Cube 2 devices that we're at the moment developing, and these will have a strong onboard SoC that enables us to run the processing required to go from a point cloud to an object list directly on the device. And on top of that, what we want to solve is something very new that we're out of the lab, is that we want to include a Wi-Fi connectivity so that the cabling running like a LAN cable to these locations is not going to be needed anymore. So then you have like a combination of a clever device that can do the processing on its own, and it doesn't have to transfer a full point cloud over Wi-Fi. Instead, it can just give out the result of there's a person at coordinates X, Y, Z, and give that out instead of having to, you know, give out every point in the scene that might, in many cases, just be not needed on the application's end.
Right. You've kind of ticked off where my next question was going, is into how do you maximize this? I suppose that then I would just ask, yes, look, you've got the model you can take out. Like again, if it's a shopping center, you know, you only want to track the people and what's going on, not the grounds, not the stores. So you can do that. Do you then have to train the model to just look for these? And how difficult is that?
I think what you're referring to is what we call on-device background subtraction. It's a mechanism we implemented for exactly these large-scale applications. If you have a full mall, you want to make sure that your network doesn't have to be like massive. So one approach we have there is that we kind of understand which parts of the scene are moving by having a reference of the background. In lots of these industry applications, you have a static scene. You mount your LiDAR somewhere, you always see the same room, you always see the same walls, the same floor. And you can remove all that without having actually to resort to machine learning. You can just basically understand, this is what I typically see, kind of make an image of that and continuously update that. And then when something new moves in the scene, you can detect that very simply and just transfer this newly introduced person, object, whatever it is. And that really greatly reduces the stress on the network and the processing needed on the other end.
That is so cool. I mean, then to look at it then, so a lot of companies then as well, when they're doing this, that they want to introduce maybe like an extra safety feature. You know, some companies use a LiDAR as well as a camera for this, you know, camera to LiDAR to judge the distance in case the camera picks things up wrong. A classic example, which was always shared with me, is let's say there's a 20-foot long logs hanging off the back of a truck. The camera says, that's a tree, it's foliage, you're fine. Yeah. In reality, it's 15 feet hanging over the end. The camera would say, yes, it's fine. You can drive up to the back of the truck. In reality, those logs are going to go through the windscreen of the car. But a LiDAR would be there to help with the distance safety. Is double safety an issue with a purely LiDAR-based system?
Well, it depends on what you're doing, right? If you're autonomously driving, I fully agree that you want to have as much information as you possibly can, because what we will expect from an autonomous vehicle is going to be much more than what we expect from a human, right? There's this argument that you say, well, why do we even need LiDAR? Humans can do it just fine without a LiDAR. But I think that's admitting that we're very good at we have very good cameras, basically. And also it's admitting that the expectations towards a mechanical solution or like a automated solution is going to be not just the human standard, right? Humans make a lot of perception mistakes. If you have getting blinded from sunlight or something like that, or you have like a white surface, you can have a really hard time judging distances even as a human. So in these applications, of course, double safety is absolutely essential. In the industry applications, what we often see is that the practical issues are more less on the safety side, right? There are applications like that where you want to make sure that, let's say, a robot doesn't hit a person going too close. But in a lot of the applications we cover, like volume measurement, for example, or people on crowd analytics or security, where the camera is at best used to kind of validate when you're in the kind of setup phase, let's say, when you're learning, if everything works as expected, because it's still easier for us humans to understand what's going on if you look at a camera. And in security, this will most likely prevail. Like if you have a security guard, the LiDAR perception will greatly increase how reliable the system is. So they will be less prone to double check. But in security, people still want to double check. So they usually will have this double kind of technology where the LiDAR will do the detection, and then the camera will be sent to the operator to make sure that, I don't know, it's nothing benign, right? It might be their colleague who went off the usual track and was wrongly detected as an intruder. And in these cases, you might want to have the camera. But we focus on the applications where you really, either the camera is already there, and security, it's mostly already there, or where you really don't need it, because we see that LiDAR as a perception technology can stand on its own in almost every industry application we've met.
Nice. Look, do you know what? Absolutely lines up fantastically with where I was coming to be. I know we've talked about cameras versus LiDARs, but if we were to talk about using them as a perception solution, where does LiDAR and point clouds mainly differ from cameras? If we take out the sort of, they can be used large scale, they can be used, you know, in areas where GDPR might be an issue. What is the fundamental differences between them? Whether that's processing power, costs, like what is the big differences, would you say?
I think the big difference is very reliable 3D information, which is very hard to get from a camera. And from radar, this is hard to get because it's very blurry, basically. And cameras have a good are getting much better in detecting stuff like faces and the shape of a person. But actually positioning that person in 3D space is still a challenge, especially if you have like unknown conditions, right? When you don't really know what your scene is going to look like, how far away you're going to be, what your lighting is going to be. So you can get rid of a lot of the kind of training efforts you need to make a camera-based machine learning solution reliable. And you can just directly rely on the 3D information you obtain because you know there's something there. The LiDAR cannot really, you know, go wrong in terms of if a point is detected. It will never return a point from air, right? There might be effects like noise when you hit a fork or something like that. But even there, you're going to have a much more clear result from an object compared to the air that's in between you and the object. So it's an active technology that works even if it's pitch black dark. It has long distances for precise detection. It has 3D kind of information inherently in it. And I would phrase it like this. It's much more natural to what you would expect a machine to look to perceive the world at, right? This process of getting color information and deriving knowledge about the size and the shape of an object from that is extremely kind of complicated and backwards when you compare it to a direct kind of 3D scan of an object.
Okay, cool. And I suppose in terms of difficulty to set one up, if you wanted to, I don't know, let's human tracking, and we're going to use the same examples we've been using here in a mall. If you want to do a POC, is it more accurate to go with point clouds or, let's say, a camera-based perception system?
Well, accuracy is a difficult term here. I think if you throw hardware at a problem, you're always going to get more and more accurate. So there's in perception, you always have this challenge of kind of obtrusions, and you can decide on how many of these cases you want to spend money on to cover them. And like the worst case is this top-down solution where you look from the top where you usually have nothing between you and the target. But this is extremely expensive and ultimately not needed if you have reliable algorithms who can kind of deal with short occlusions of let's say there's a pillar in your scene, somebody walks behind it and comes back out. And if you can deal with that well in your algorithms, you might have like small deviations in accuracy, but these are usually a very good trade-off compared to the additional cost and kind of setup complexity of having kind of your whole mall plastered with 2D cameras that look top down. So that's an important kind of consideration. And the other thing that helps, of course, you have to do, ideally you do a simulation beforehand. So we have a good kind of software suite for doing just that, where you can kind of lay out the scene before you actually go there and make sure that you have a good coverage of what you want to see. And that's also an aspect that kind of differentiates us from a lot of other LiDAR players, that we have a really strong kind of capability of understanding new scenarios. So we often get approached by customers with new ideas. That's the cool thing about this market. There's more ideas than we can realistically tackle. So we have to kind of cherry pick the ones where the value we generate for customers is the highest, so that it makes sense for them to roll this out large scale and that we can kind of multiply it to other areas. Good example here would be volume measurement. That's an area that the LiDAR is extremely strong at, because you get you can imagine like there's a lot of people in the world who have bulk goods like food or building materials that just get piled in a compartment somewhere. And it's a really hard thing for us humans to judge, like how much grain is this, how much building material is this. And this is where LiDAR really shines. And when you have customers who have this kind of knowledge gap in their processes, right, when they want to understand what their inventory is and how much what's taken away per day, that this generates a high value for them. And this is much more sensible than let's say a lot of other ideas people have that might be fun to implement, right? But it might not ultimately give you so much kind of repeat business, basically, or doesn't make that much impact on the industry as a whole.
I do see you guys as I would say the reason why everyone thinks you're in autonomous driving is because every other LiDAR based company I see is in autonomous driving. And they're focused on using, you know, LiDARs, radars, and camera-based technologies, where I think that's kind of just a perception that people have on the market, is LiDAR is going for ADAS, and I suppose not so much just autonomous technology. I suppose leading into that, where do you see Blickfeld in the future in terms of where can you be adding value to companies, to products? Where do you think the average person at home could foresee a potential LiDAR come into their life?
So I think the reason why people associate with automotive and autonomous driving first is because that's what is mostly in the media. And a lot of these industry applications that will change our life as well are not something that is kind of everyday. You know, you don't do volume measurement in your everyday life. You're never gonna do, most likely. But I think what we see is that bringing this technology into, let's say, home devices, right? The point is that LiDAR will get cheaper, or is getting cheaper all the time. Like, we started out with these expensive, like, 100,000 euro devices. Now we're down to a low four-digit numbers. And we believe that this trend will continue. Components get cheaper, the scaling goes up, and you can deliver LiDAR. So that makes sense first to the enthusiast, and later to everybody who has a kind of perception need. And what we envision here is that if you're thinking like a smart home application, right, you want your house, your home to understand what's going on within it, right? You want to understand which room is a person in, how many people are in there, does it make sense to change the heating, did a person walk into the home, is somebody parked in my driveway, stuff like that. And this is really something where you can utilize such a perception technology that is very reliable and doesn't depend on you, you know, understanding your home setting. It could be in every home, basically, where you today have like cameras already in many applications. But if people, I think, are not very comfortable having a camera monitor them 24/7 in their living room. But I think it's going to be different if it's like just the shapes of your body, right? So you could use it for gestures, for understanding at kind of how full a room is, what's going on in the room. You could have your washing machine detect if you're approaching it and kind of open up for you already. So we see that there's a lot of potential that goes along with making the technology smaller and cheaper. And this is also the direction we're taking it.
I remember hearing first about, you know, smart home and IoT about 6 years ago, and people were saying it was kind of like, you know, the buzz of where self-driving cars was maybe 10 years ago. Everyone thought it was going to happen straight away, right? Someone was like, yeah, IoT, you're going to be able to wake up in the morning, your alarm going off will tell the coffee machine downstairs to have a coffee ready for you to go down. Your fridge will send you a text message if you've got no milk. and it's 5:45, so it knows you're on the way home. I think obviously that was a little bit much of a stretch, considering it was about 6 years ago, especially. But I do think smarter homes and IoT devices, there's still a lot more to come.
Yeah, and there's also applications I don't think we have in mind at the moment. So let's say you have a swimming pool, right, you have small children. You want to make sure they don't go anywhere near it. Of course, you could put a fence around it. That would be effective, but a lot of people don't do it. So that's a security system I can envision that is really kind of straightforward to implement with a LiDAR. And it could give you a clear warning with something is going on in the water, for example. And you wouldn't have to be dependent on the shadows and the other stuff that might happen, right, an animal or something like that. You could really be precise about this and kind of track anybody approaching the pool, give a pre-warning, and then when somebody actually goes in. And that's an example of a system that just, to my knowledge, doesn't exist yet. And I think there is going to be these applications when you kind of enable machines to easier perceive the environment and more reliably perceive it, that you can really kind of augment your life in a way that we don't really, you know, understand yet. And I think that's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't have any smart vision devices at home. Of course, an Alexa. I mean, but I don't really use that as a smart device.
Well, it's more smart audio, I guess.
Yeah, more of a speaker, right? So we still haven't. I'm pretty sure a lot of people are the same there. I guess, you know, maybe a Ring doorbell that goes to your phone, but that's still not.
Well, There's two devices you might have. Like one is the, well, one is a bit older, is the Kinect from Microsoft. It's for entertainment purposes, right? You want to, you jump around in front of your TV and the console will detect your movements. And the other thing is every iPhone has a LiDAR in it today. And there's good reason why Apple is including that. You could argue the same way. You could say no phone has a LiDAR. Why would I ever need a LiDAR in my phone? But once you have it, you can do stuff like you can measure your furniture. You can measure the height of something without actually walking there. I think this enables, this shows the kind of the transition from, well, a camera is good enough. I have my camera in my phone, to actually making sure that your camera understands what's going on in the scene, or your phone understands what's going on in the scene, instead of, you know, having to guess that based on shadows and line estimations and stuff like that. So you can get more direct information into your phone. And this is getting used as well in applications that we didn't really think about or didn't really do with our phones in the past. And I think it will be much more, you know, commonplace. And also us programmers, right? At the moment, there's very few people who deal with 3D data, as in 3D point cloud data from LiDAR. This is growing, but it's still in its infancy at the moment. And once this really takes off and hobbyists start to play around with this, I'm sure that a lot of ideas and applications will arise. And I see this from the ideas people come to us for, right? From film studios who say, I want to put this in my camera to make sure that my 3D kind of special effects team has good ground truth data for inserting effects. This is an application we didn't think of when we founded Blickfeld or when we thought about LiDAR usage, but it makes complete sense. And I think there's a lot of these kind of potentials that we are learning about as a collective. And I think that's what excites me so much, that this is not like a one trick pony. It's like a, you know, it has a lot of applications and a lot of potential to really revolutionize a lot of industries, which is what really motivates me every day.
That's pretty cool. And I do think it's kind of like a lead up to, we see a lot of cool videos, right? And a lot of it's not necessarily the stuff that's actually happening now. It's a lot of conceptual stuff. Like IKEA is now able to, you press a button and it can change the paint color in your house. You can start going through their catalogs and you can place a sofa, but it will place the sofa to scale to the room as it would be in its right size, depending on obviously the distance that you're standing away from the position you want it to be. And these sizes. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of future stuff coming through. Where do you see the future of the future of state-of-the-art LiDAR? I mean, we've talked about some use cases. If it was able to operate to its full potential, where do you think it could be in 2-5 years?
I think it will be a lot more present in our lives, and especially in our work lives. There's a big push in a lot of companies to digitalize the kind of processes, to understand more about what's going on. If you think like, as an example, an airport, there's a lot of, say, person-based things going on, right? You understand where a queue's forming, how much time can people spend on shopping areas, which shopping areas are the most traveled to or most visited. And once you enable companies to capture this data, it really helps them make their processes more efficient and more, digital and more streamlined. You don't have to send a person anymore to go into the booth of the production material and to check how much is still there. You just have that information at your fingertips. So I think it will revolutionize the way that we understand our digital systems, understand what's going on in the real world. Because today, this is like you said, nobody has a perception-based system for their home at the moment, because it's just not very practical based on cameras. And once you make this happen for industry applications and for private use as well, I think the metaverse is maybe a good example, right? Facebook is going towards trying to make a mirror world, basically, where you can be in your room and still be somewhere else. And I think this kind of shows the direction we will go to. We will want to have like a blur between, but it will happen that we're going to have a blur between what's real and what's virtual, and to get stuff from the real world into the virtual world, and the other way around, like you mentioned with your IKEA example, right? You have your virtual sofa maybe projected into your room while you look at it. I think that's something that will get much more normalized for us. And something like LiDAR is a big enabler to this. in my opinion, because it's kind of speaking the language of the machine that is trying to kind of fuse these two, the reality and the virtual world together. So I think it's going to be a very important kind of bridge technology between these environments.
I'd love to see it in the metaverse. I am also kind of thinking that that could be where the smartphone was 20 years. It could have that big of an impact. But yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, it's like cameras, right? In the beginning, cameras were very expensive, rarely used by private people. They were just used for making films and stuff like that. And then came today, you have like a high resolution, perfect camera in your phone for a few euros. And I think that could be the way of the LiDAR as well, that you just have it so cheaply available and so kind of naturally available that you're not going to think about, do I need a LiDAR here or not? It's just going to be like a camera today. We just want to have it and kind of give your machine eyes, basically, that really enable it to directly see. Your example earlier with a tree going from the back of a lorry is a good example, I think, where you're always going to have a kind of perception questions where you really benefit from having this direct 3D data and not having to do guesswork based on the colors you return from your lens. It's just extremely direct compared to many other perception technologies.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to come from it. But look, I think that's going to have to do us on time, Rolf. We've sure. run out. Thanks a million for your time. And for everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. Today's guest is Rolf Wojtek, the founder and chief software architect at Blickfeld. Great to have you, Rolf.
Thanks for having me. It has been good fun, good discussion, and really love your content.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Computer Vision in Production podcast with your host, Anthony Kelly. To make sure you get updates on the latest episodes of the show, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast listening app or add me on LinkedIn.